When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Now, it's a very special day today because normally when I speak to our Dr. David Dearden, we have to do it over the phone because first we had COVID and then he was too far away. But today he's come down to see us. Welcome to the show, Dr. David Dearden.
Hey, we're all back together.
It's just like old times.
It is. Goodness. And it's just great. Great to see everybody outside.
You haven't changed a bit.
Oh, you're so kind. And neither, you haven't either at all.
Bless
it's great
you.
To see everybody. I mean, we're just saying it's over 2 years since I've been here.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I suppose it would be, wouldn't it? What with COVID and everything.
But COVID was March 2020, and I think I just stopped coming here back end of 2019. So.
And Gibraltar's not just around the corner, is it? Let's be fair.
It isn't. It's close enough, but the issue with the border crossings and so on, it just can be a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I was up here anyway, so we fitted this in beforehand, which is great.
Perfect. I'm very happy. What a great way to end the week. So, if any of our listeners want to use this time wisely and ask our doctor any questions, the subject today, I have to say, is skin cancer because it's that time of the year when it becomes very, very important. So, I'll give you the contact details if you want to get in touch.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
So let's go back to basics, Dr. David. For those that don't know and for those who have forgotten, what exactly is skin cancer?
Well, there's a question. Well, it is a malignant growth that grows on your skin or within your skin. And I mean, it's a great pub question, isn't it? What is the largest body organ in your body?
Skin.
And everybody says your liver or your brain or whatever, but it's actually your skin.
Yeah.
And your skin is massive when you actually look at it as a single organ. And it's a really important piece of kit because what it does is it protects us from dehydration, it protects us from pathogens, it protects us from all types of things. But of course, like all other bits of the body, things can go wrong. And so again, like all cancers, when you get a disruption of the DNA in the cells in the skin, and if those are not picked up by the immune system and dealt with, they can become a tumor, and some of those tumors can be malignant. So broadly speaking, there are basically I would say four types of skin cancer, which are split into two broad types. There's non-melanoma type skin cancers and melanomatous type skin cancers, and I'll explain a bit more about that later. But with the non-melanomatous skin cancers, which are the ones we see more commonly, the two commonest ones we see are something called a basal cell carcinoma. And carcinoma is just a medical word to mean cancer in a skin or a membrane. And the other one is squamous cell carcinoma. A basal cell carcinoma, the skin is made up of many layers, and it's a continually evolving piece of tissue which starts in the very base of the skin where the new cells are created. And as the cell gets older, it moves up towards the surface and then it sloughs off. And this is the superficial layer that sloughs off from everybody every day, all day long. And it's a continually repairing a piece of tissue. That's why scars heal and wounds heal and everything else heals. So a basal cell carcinoma, no surprises, it occurs in the basal cells, the very, very young cells at the very base of the skin. And the squamous cell carcinoma occurs in the scales a bit higher up, and they give us different patterns and different presentations. With these two tumours, we know there's a link with ultraviolet light, and we know that the ultraviolet light from the sun causes these tumours. When at the end of the Second World War, when the people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki got exposed to massive amounts of radiation, one of the tumours that became seen very, very prevalently were cancers of the skin. There were other, obviously, awful cancers as well, and skin cancers can be awful, but there was an awful lot of skin cancers developed in the years following that. So radiation is a major factor. There are a number of less common skin tumours, which we can talk about later, coming from lymph cells or connective tissue cells in the skin, but they're very, very rare, and we'll talk about presentation, I guess, later. But the other one that people want to know about is the melanoma.
Yeah.
And that is a tumour in the skin, but this arises from the pigmented cells in the skin, not from the actual structure of the skin itself. The pigmented cells sit within the skin and give you colour.
That's called
They're called melanocytes, and the pigment is called melanin.
Yes.
And obviously it varies depending on where you are in the world. Obviously there's people have a lot more melanin when you're living nearer the equator, and a lot less melanin when you're living far away. People in Iceland, for instance, don't have as much as people living in sub-Saharan Africa. And that accounts for skin colour changes. But with this particular tumour, we know there's a link with ultraviolet light. And we know that people who get exposed to ultraviolet light a lot are more at risk of developing it. But we also know that melanomas can occur in places not in the skin, for instance, in the eye or in the intestines and so on. So therefore, there's a bit more to this disease we don't fully understand. And there's a lot of research going on at the moment. So, some people can get melanomas in the eye and they're picked up, quite rarely when people start having visual problems. And they can also occur in places that are hidden from the sun. For instance, Bob Marley had a melanoma under his great toenail. That was a major problem for him.
Wow.
So these are the type of things that, it's not quite as straightforward as the other tumours. But that said, it's a very eminently curable condition these days. It's something that we have a lot of new treatments for, and the treatments are evolving, every year. So it's an area of ongoing research.
Mm-hmm.
Many people will know that, or maybe not know, but up until, I would say, the 60s, 50s, 60s, we didn't really appreciate the link between sunlight and skin tumours. But it was really the development of increased skin tumours in the Australian population that led to the link between the sunlight and skin disease. Back in the 50s and 60s, a lot of people from the UK emigrated to Australia and started moving up the coast and moving into Queensland and so on, and we saw an increase in sunlight exposure and sunlight induced skin conditions. So we've now learned, obviously, that as people become much more globalised and move around the world, and people from the northern hemisphere move into, or the northern latitudes actually move into the more equatorial areas, they are at increased risk. Hence the news about wearing hats and sun cream and protecting the skin and trying to avoid sunlight and, well, excessive sunlight and the midday sun.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it, the word excessive, because there's a balance. We're continually being told nowadays that we should have about 15 minutes of sunshine because of the vitamin D. And I personally had to go for some blood tests a few weeks ago and was told that I'm vitamin D deficient.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't it great? So yeah. I'm now taking vitamin D capsules and I live in this beautiful country.
Well, this is exactly it. And we see a lot of this in our patients when we do routine screening or health checks or whatever, and there is a pandemic of vitamin D deficiency in this area, and it's because we wear sunblock, we sit in the shade,
ourselves.
We protect ourselves,
yeah.
And obviously in the UK, where there's less sunlight and so on, people don't get the exposure, but they have hats and coats and everything else, so they don't get the vitamin D. And vitamin D is really, really important for bone health and keeping the calcium metabolism working within the body. And calcium is an ion which is really important in so many different ways in the body, for nerve activity, for muscle activity, brain activity, and so exposure to sunlight is important because that is what converts the inactive vitamin to the active vitamin when we get the vitamin from food. So if that's not happening, you have to take additional vitamin D in order to make the whole of the calcium phosphate biochemical reactions work better.
I was surprised because whilst I no longer sunbathe, I used to in my youth, but I don't sunbathe anymore, but I'm out in it a lot, you know, just going to the shops, just going for a walk, you're out in it. So what's the answer in weather like this when it really is hot? Should you be around 15 minutes with no protection or just lower protection, or what's the
best
thing?
This is the problem, isn't it? It's where's the balance? And I don't think I can give you an answer to that because I don't really know anybody. I don't think anybody really knows.
Yeah.
I think I wouldn't advocate anybody going out in the sunlight without protection in the weather we have at the moment, for sure. I think if you're going to go out and you're going to take the sun, then you do it in the morning or you do it in the evening when the sun isn't so intense. You maybe use a lesser block, but you have to have some ultraviolet protection because of the risks that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a balance between having a suntan and a vitamin D problem or a skin problem, and there's no prescribable happy medium. I think it's everybody has to make a choice.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult one because, you know, I'm like you. I don't tend to sunbathe. I'm out in the sun quite a lot, wear hats, you know, wear the sunblock, so I'm always pretty pale, but
I've always got a pale face. Yeah.
But I think when I go home to England, my relatives say, do you really live in Spain?
I know that, I get exactly
but
the
that's
same.
That's the nature of those of us that have been here, you know, for many years. We are sensible with the sun, but the price we pay is the vitamin D health, which we have to look at.
So is it about, in order to try and avoid skin cancer, is it about not burning? Could you go out for, say, 10 minutes and as soon as you felt like you were burning, come in? Is it not anything to do with burning the skin?
Certainly burning is a very big risk factor. If you have a bad burn, the likelihood of you developing a basal cell or a squamous cell tumour in the future is significantly increased. I remember I was at a wedding in California many years ago and burnt both my shoulders, and I keep very, very close eye on the skin on my shoulders.
Right.
Anything that I've, thankfully nothing's happened, but if you've, and I think when we talk to patients who have present with these tumours, they often give a history of either spending the summers as kids, you know, with olive oil on them and trying to roast in the sun,
for sure,
or having had an episode of bad sunburn, or frequent repeated sort of days where they had red, very red burnt skin, and maybe not to the point of ulceration or lost skin loss, but repeated exposure. So there certainly seems to be an association between the burning or extreme sunburning or sun exposure and delayed development. Remember, these tumors don't develop the day after, they take 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
So people don't really remember what they did 20, 30 years ago. But as a, you know, we all know what, you know, people of my generation know what we did when we were playing out in the sun. We did nothing. Whereas today, our kids are all slapped on with the sunblock and so on.
They're probably all vitamin D deficient, our kids.
Possibly.
But we also used to, in the 80s and 90s, we used to use sunbeds as well, didn't we? That presumably
that's a big risk factor.
Yeah.
For all three types of tumours. The other rarer tumours that I'm talking about don't seem to be related to ultraviolet radiation. You know, the connective tissue leiomyosarcomas or the lymphoid type diseases, they don't seem to have a radiation link. Something else is happening in those, but certainly with the basal cell, the squamous cell and the melanomas, those certainly were linked to sunbeds. There's an increased risk in people who use sunbeds on a regular basis.
Yeah. I've got I haven't had a chance to read it, so I'm hoping it's okay. From Jason, we've had three WhatsApps from Jason's. I think that was an earlier one. If it's possible that in addition to the sun contribution to skin cancer, that sun creams are also a common denomination, could all the enzema from creams and lotions be contributing to skin cancer?
It's an interesting question, isn't it? There's no hard evidence to support that at all. I understand the question clearly. If you put chemicals on your skin, is there a risk associated with that? And we don't know what's in the skin, lotions or the sun protection barriers that we use. So I suppose hypothetically, we may discover in 20, 30, 40 years' time there might be a chemical there that might be contributing. But the fact is that these tumours were developing before we used excessive sun lotions. So therefore, we know that whilst the creams may have a small effect, the main effect is the radiation.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting question.
The less of two evils, I suppose.
Well, I think so. There's no research that shows that. There's no papers that I've seen that actually link the cream to the tumour development. And remember, this is a 20-30 year delay disease. So it's very difficult to do any prospective proper trials to make that link. But the caller may have a point, but yeah. I can't confirm that at all.
And as far as signs are concerned, what are we looking for? I understand it as a raised mole that changes shape or starts to bleed. Mm. Is there anything else?
Well, I think all three major types of skin tumour have the same things to think about. And I like to think about it as A, B, C, D, E. A is for asymmetry. That means they start to become irregular around the edges. B, or asymmetry, so one side is a different shape to the other side, so it's not a nice round thing. B is irregularity, so instead of having a smooth surface, it's got a ragged surface. C is for change of colour. D is for the diameter, is it getting bigger? And E is evolving, so it's changing and it's continuing to change. So if you've got any mold or anything on your body or any lesion on your body that's doing any of those things, then keep a close eye on it and by all means take it to see a doctor. I think doctors would rather see you and say it's okay or come back and see me than you leave it. I mean, I had a patient actually last year who had a lesion on his neck. And he was told by his barber that it was a shaving rash, and he left it during the COVID period. And by the time he came to see me, it must have been about, I don't know, I would say 5 inches long.
Oh my goodness.
And about an inch and a half wide in his neck. And it didn't look particularly bad. It wasn't. But when we biopsied it, it was indeed a squamous cell carcinoma, and we removed it, and he's done very well. But he had to have a pretty major excision on his neck, and another patient who had a lesion on their abdomen, which they'd left and not sought advice for probably, I would say, 3 to 5 years. So by the time it came to us, it was probably the size of, I don't know, maybe 5-10 centimetres across, and that was removed as well successfully. But because the squamous cell and the basal cell tumours, they grow by just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they do spread. Some of them do spread, but very late on. So you can control them by just local surgery and removing them and closing the skin. And if you have to remove a big area or the skin's over a tight area, you have to skin graft it, and that's the way it is. The melanoma, on the other hand, it moves away from where it is along the lines of the lymphatic ducts, so it moves through the lymphatic system rather than the blood system. Most tumours pass through the lymphatic system, but some tumours pass through the lymphatic system, and the melanoma is one of those. So you see that developing in lymph nodes. So often we will check lymph nodes at the time of removing the tumour. Sometimes not. It depends on the presentation and it depends on the grade of the tumour. We measure the tumour depth and the tumour size, and then there's an algorithm we use to tell us what the next stages of what we should do are, and we follow that. People may have heard of Clark and Breslow scores. These are the ways we actually can start to look at the thickness and the ergo the severity of the disease that they have.
Because sometimes the doctor, if you're concerned, would say, well, we'll remove it anyway. If it's a mole that is unsightly or whatever, they'll remove it just to be on the safe side, won't they?
Well, we do. I mean, I think we would be criticised if we didn't, because I think every single doctor who does this type of surgery will recall a case where they left it and it turned out to be a tumour. So we tend to err on the side of caution. If it's causing concern, I'd rather take a smaller lesion out and check it and say, no, that was okay, than leave it till it's a bigger tumour where we have to take it out and do a skin graft or a much more major surgery.
Yeah.
So I would rather, I'm very happy to see people with these lesions. And obviously some of the lesions we see, they are clearly benign, in which case it's a cosmetic procedure and then it's down to the patient whether they need it. But without sort of x-ray eyes and microscopic eyes, it's very difficult to do this. And the dermatologists I work with, they've got a special thing called a dermatoscope where they have a much better idea just looking at the very small lesions for little tiny characteristics that they can say that's more likely to be a tumour, that's less likely to be a tumour.
Yeah.
And so on the balance, they'll say, remove this one, we'll watch that one. But that comes with years of experience and having seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of patients, which is why, you know, seeing a specialist or somebody who's got an interest in skin disease is probably better than seeing somebody who sees these things once or twice, you know, a week, yeah, rather than 15 or 20 times a week.
And forgive me, David, a lesion is a raised mole.
Yes. A lesion is a medical term. A lesion would be something that's abnormal, and it could be a raised mole, or it could be a flat mole, it could be red, it could be pigmented, it could be just the same colour as the skin but elevated. Remember, sometimes these melanomas, you can have melanomas that don't have black melanin in them. They can be amelanotic melanomas. So anything that's changing, anything that's raising, anything that you're concerned about, get it checked out.
Yeah, good advice. Top advice there from Dr. David. Get it checked out if you're not sure. And if you do have a lesion or a raised mole, just keep your eye on it to make sure it doesn't change. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure. Probably won't see you again for another year.
Well, who knows? But let's make sure it happens at least once a year.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. How is it going up there? Because I saw a video of your specialist medical clinic. It's huge.
It is. Every time I go up there, I come out in a cold sweat and worry my little heart out that it's gonna kill me. But it's massive.
It's massive. It's wonderful. It looks great. I'm just going to take this last call. We've just got time for one call.
They've
left it right to the 11th hour, but hopefully we'll be okay. Good afternoon. Who's there, please?
Estepona.
Sorry, who is it? We missed you there. Who is it? Sorry?
John Estepona.
Hi, John.
Hello. I know you're talking about cancers. Will you accept other calls for other general things?
I'll ask Dr. David. Is that okay? It all depends what it is, really. Give us a try.
Try us and see if I can help. We'll see.
Hernias.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I can possibly help. Well, probably help you with that.
Okay. So I have this hernia from my navel to my sternum. If you put your hand on your stomach when you're lying flat,
yeah,
and then put another hand on top of it,
yeah,
and then I do a sit up,
yeah,
that's the size of the hernia that comes out.
Yes.
Wow.
Is it bigger underneath, like an iceberg, or what's the problem with it?
So what you're talking about there is something called a divarification of the rectus muscles.
Okay.
That means that the two big sort of six-pack muscles that go down the front of your body, they're normally very close together, but they can move apart. You know, if you are you a large man, a thin man? Have you done a lot of manual labour in your work?
I used to be manual labour. I'm 66 now.
Yeah.
I'm not doing very much of anything.
Yeah.
But I'm about, I don't know, 100 and something kilos.
Okay. So the most likely thing is that the muscles have separated over time. The big muscles have separated, and the membrane between the two of them doesn't have the same strength as the muscles did. So when you sit up, that membrane doesn't have the resistance to stop the abdominal contents bulging through. So you get this linear bulge from the umbilicus up to the ziphysternum. It's not technically a hernia. It's a fibrous weakness. Can be fixed surgically, but in my practice, I would probably want to see you lose a bit of weight before I considered taking it on. And I think most surgeons would say the same. But it's something that is, as you say, it's. Yeah, when you're sitting on the beach or when you sit up, it pops out and people don't like that. So they'd like to try and get them fixed if they can. But it's something that can be improved by exercise and weight loss. So trying to get the rectus muscles a bit more firm and bring them back to tone would be good. But you need to also reduce the pressure behind the muscle, the abdominal wall, to get the best results.
So there's not a huge bulb underneath, as they say.
No, this not at all. No, no, there's not a big bulb under. Well, not a big bulge under. Well, there is a bulge, but it's not like an incisional hernia where there's been a scar or the one in your groin. It's a slightly different pathology.
Yeah.
Does that help, John?
Yes, thank you very much. It's put my mind at rest.
Ah, that's good. You have a good day.
Take care now, John. All the best.
Bye. Okie dokie. So how can people get in touch with you then, David?
Well, with what's going on at the moment, the best way is to contact me through the Specialist Medical Clinic in Gibraltar, which is 00350 for Gibraltar and then 200-4999. Yeah, all the nines, yeah. 49999. Okay, and as the hospital comes online, we'll be posting more information about it, and people will be hearing more about it up the coast, because I think being able to come and see English speaking doctors in a British environment might be attractive to people.
For sure. Yeah. We've still got to do a radio show up there.
Oh well, look, you're going to come to the opening, aren't you?
I certainly am.
We're going to have a radio show from the opening. When
you got any idea when it'll be? Will it be this year?
Yeah, how long's the ministry? we've got the war in Ukraine, so that's put the price of all the kit up, and we've got the border problems, and we've got the transportation and Brexit. Look, why did I do it this year?
Got a new prime minister to boot.
I should have done it 5 years ago or in 5 years' time, not now. But once it's up and done, it'll be good.
It'll be worth it. Yeah, lovely to see you, David. Thanks for being on the show again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.